Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Thanks for being with us. As promised, pro-life open forum this hour. You can call with any of questions about that you have about the proper treatment, the care for, our obligations to human life in any stage, from conception to natural death, what is owed, and what's appropriate and inappropriate in treating folks. We have Dr. George Delgado here with us, who's, as I said earlier, is a physician and also an ethicist, well-trained by the folks over at the
Catholic Bioethics Center.
Why was I having trouble with that? I had a National Catholic Bioethics Center. Dr. George Delgado, thanks for being with us.
It's great to be here.
Interesting times we live in, as a pro-lifer, one never knows what one's going to find when you wake up in the morning in the news. But there's a Roe v. Wade movie coming out. What do you know about that?
Yeah, the Roe v. Wade movie, it was previewed at a big conference, CAPC, and it got good reviews. It really is a good look at the historical background of the case Roe versus Wade, which legalized abortion in the United States for the most part. And it also traces the personal stories of Dr. Bernard Nathanson, who was one of the big architects of getting abortion legalized across the country, including his part in totally fabricating numbers about number of illegal abortions. He later admitted that he and others pulled those numbers out of a hat. There was no substantiation for them at all. And then as time went on and ultrasound came around, he was able to see abortions being performed on ultrasound. And that convinced him that this was not just an affront to the dignity of the preborn person, but actual killing of innocent human beings. And he stopped doing abortions. He became pro-life, became Christian, and eventually he became a Catholic Christian. So a great, great story of his personal conversion. Also peeks at other people who were involved with it, seeing what happened to Norma McCarvey, who was the person who was given the pseudonym Roe, Jane Roe. She really did not want to be part of this lawsuit, for she was used as a pawn, essentially. And detail some of that, and she eventually became pro-life and eventually became Catholic too. So really a fascinating drama, and even no matter what side of the issue you land on, they're very fascinating drama and good historical perspective. So I think a great movie for anybody to see, and I'm hoping that certainly people who are kind of on the fence about abortion will see this and really decide, hey, this really is a wrong decision. You know, jurisprudence perspective, this whole right to privacy on which this is based was pulled from the Connecticut versus Grisham case, and William O. Douglas was on that case, and really that was also pulled out of thin air. This was a creation of a right to privacy from emanations from a penumbra of a couple of the amendments.
Right.
So I think it'll be very interesting for people, very, very enlightening too.
So I'm so happy to hear it, because we need good news on the pro-life front, and it does seem all the way since the time when Roe versus Wade was decided, and even before that, but certainly since that time, so much of our battle for the pro-life position has been one of telling the true story, of just getting the true story out about what happens in abortion, about what happens to both the mom and the baby in abortion, and the true story of the social consequences of this, of what happens to our society. And it seems like finally we're learning to tell our story.
Yes, finally we are. And, you know, it is, again, it is quite telling too that a position, a cause that is built on lies is at its core evil, and that's exactly what it is with abortion.
Yeah.
And so many people have, you know, even goodwill have been sucked up in these lies, but now I think people are starting to see the truth, and hopefully the truth will set us free.
888-318-7884, our number. At the same time, it's not all good news, and there's certainly while we seem on the verge, possibly, of some victories as far as defending life in its earliest stages, life in its latest stages, less and less respected. I mean, Spain just passed an assisted suicide law. That's growing everywhere. Why do we stand against assisted suicide?
Well, because we stand in support of all innocent life. All innocent human life ought to be protected, whether these are human persons in the uterus, even as small as the one cell stage zygote, or a couple of cells later as it becomes an embryo, or if that life is a newborn baby who's or just coming out of the birth canal, or an older baby, or a toddler, or a child, or a fit adult, or a senescent or aging adult who's losing the capacity. You know, if we don't protect all human beings, we can't protect any human beings, as the saying goes. And we believe, and the natural law supports us, and scripture and tradition support us, that all human beings are created in the image of God, and therefore we all have equal value in the eyes of God. And if we think back, if we're made in God's image, then what's the name that God gave himself in the Old Testament? It was I Am. And that's what Jesus called himself too when he claimed divinity, I Am. And that's why they wanted to crucify him, because he said, I Am. And it wasn't, I do this, I do that, I have value. No, it's I Am. In other words, I exist. And so it's our literal existence, the fact that we are alive, that gives us value. It's not what we can do, how much we can say, whether we can walk or talk or be productive. It's the fact that we are human persons. And so we have to keep that in mind. And when we lose that, we start becoming utilitarian. That's when we slip into, on one end of the spectrum, abortion, because the preborn baby is not able to produce or add value in any sort of economically quantifiable way. It seems to be only a burden when you look at him or her, and therefore that person can be expendable. On the other end of the spectrum, when a elderly, frail person who is demented is no longer able to protect him or herself by use of voice or by moving away, that person then becomes a victim. And then that overall, it affects how people see themselves and see their quality, and they start rating their quality of life based on those false presuppositions. And then you get into the euthanasia, where people then start to decide, well, my life is no longer worth living because I'm suffering, or because I'm a burden, or because I can no longer exercise my autonomy. And by the way, lack of control or autonomy in the United States, anyway, has been the most common reason for selecting physician-assisted suicide. Yeah. So then you get into physician-assisted suicide, where people actually choose to end their own lives with the assistance of physicians, because they themselves have now become the arbiters of their own lives. Total control, in other
right.
words.
Yes.
The created person now is acting as master instead of steward of the life God has given him or her.
Our number is 888-318-7884. Our guest is Dr. George Delgado, and it is a pro-life open forum. If you have questions about the proper treatment of life in any stage, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. And you don't have to be Catholic to call. Anyone's call is welcome. We're starting in Australia. Peter in Brisbane, Australia, watching on Catholic.com. You are first up. Peter, go ahead with your question for Dr. Delgado.
Good morning, Dr. Delgado. I don't know whether you've heard of a development in Australia where they've actually taken the skin cells and created an iBlastoid without the need of fertilization.
Okay, so your connection is a little bit unclear, but I think what you said was they took skin cells and they created a human embryo?
Yes,
is that what you said?
Without fertilization.
And so are you looking what's the ethics of that? Is that what you'd like Dr. Delgado to address?
Yes. I mean, it's an embryo.
Right.
They don't believe it'll last more than about 2 weeks. But there's some ethical things. And the other thing is, could such an embryo be used in for embryonic stem stem cell research.
Okay, Peter, thank you. Dr. Delgado?
Yeah, thank you for the question. So it, I've not heard of this being done in Australia. This probably was done by a Japanese researcher who was later discredited, where he apparently did create embryos in the laboratory by what's called cloning. And cloning is where you can take a cell from a person. For example, skin cells are commonly used. You can take the nucleus out of that skin cell, insert it into a woman's egg, which has had its nucleus removed. Then you apply electrical current or some sort of stimulus. That turns on that nucleus to start carrying out the reactions as if that were a new zygote or one-celled human being, if it's a human egg and human nucleus. And then it starts to develop into an embryo. So that apparently has been done. And I don't know if that actually has been done in Australia. If so, that that kind of process is unequivocally considered unethical and evil according to Christian principles and according to the natural moral law. And the reason for that is that, first of all, it's an affront to the dignity of that newly created human person. Because remember, God always keeps his promises. So when a new human organism is created, God will ensoul that human organism and therefore transform that human organism into a person. So we believe that, and that's been demonstrated through various accidents of nature, for example. So it's an affront to the dignity of that human person created in such a way, because a person has a right to be created in the marital embrace. When husband and wife come together and have normal, natural intercourse, created within God's design. So that is the main reason why that is unethical. The other is that these human embryos are being, if they are created, would be created mostly for experimentation and possibly for the use of treatment of different diseases in other people. And there's even the possibility that they could be grown into larger humans, fetuses, and then their organs harvested. So it's a total use of these human persons as commodities. So again, it's using people not for the using people, not treating them as human individuals who deserve to be respected as individuals in and of themselves, but using them for other ends. So that's the first thing. Now, what's also being done, and I don't know if what's being done in Australia is this, and that is that you can do the same process, take that nucleus from a skin cell, alter the nucleus so that it cannot create an embryo, put it into an egg that has its nucleus removed, and then you create what's called induced pluripotent cell. And so that cell becomes like the cell of an embryo, but it cannot create the whole embryo. So that, if that occurs, is not considered ethically illicit. It's considered to be morally acceptable if they do that. And that has been demonstrated that it can be done. So we just want to make sure. I don't know what the facts are of what's been done in Australia, but if it's the first, it constitutes cloning, which would be immoral. The second, an induced pluripotent cell, would be morally acceptable for that.
And thank you very much for the call. It's kind of nice to start off in Australia and be greeted good morning from Australia. Thank you, Peter. But we have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Pro-Life Open Forum with our guest, Dr. George Delgado.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
I didn't take my faith seriously, which probably means I never really got it to begin with. No, I didn't want to give up sin. The reason we sin is because sin is fun. But it's self-love sin. But it's amazing with God's grace how easy trying to not sin it really is.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for whatever reason, we invite you to take another look. Visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Oh, Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Dr. George Delgado is our guest, and it's a pro-life open forum. If you have questions about the proper care of life in any stage, 888-318-7884. Please feel free to call if you are not a Catholic, if you're not a Christian. We love talking about these topics with just about anybody. No, I think anybody. We'd love to talk about it with anybody. 888-318-7884. Pro-life open forum. If you have a question about life in any of its stages, you're welcome to call. We go now to Sydney in South Bend, Indiana, listening on Redeemer Radio. Sydney, go ahead with your question for Dr. Delgado.
Good evening, Dr. Delgado. Did you see my question up on the board? I'm trying to get a fix on how many OBGYNs are actually pro-abortion these days. Do you have any sense of the numbers?
So, yeah, I can tell you that some of the studies show that about 14 to 15% of OBGYNs actually perform abortions. And as far as the number who actually support abortion, are pro-abortion, that's a little more difficult to find. So I'm not sure about that. I would think that it's probably depends on the age, also the sex of the OBGYN, and we're probably no more than 50% of OBGYNs are probably pro-life. That would be my estimate, but again, that's not based on me having looked at studies.
Does that help you, Sydney?
I really appreciate your answer because I'm gravely concerned, as I'm sure you are too, by our new Secretary of Health and Human Services, Javier Becerra, in terms of his being extremely pro-abortion. But I recently found out that his wife is a perinatologist. And I guess I was just astounded, Dr. Delgado, that someone who specializes in high-risk pregnancies could presumably be so pro-abortion.
Yes, well, and I don't know if his wife is pro-abortion. She may not be. It's hard to say. I think many perinatologists I have encountered often are pro-life but still would offer abortion referrals for their patients if they wanted them. So those things can be really difficult to tease out if, you know, sort of personal beliefs as far as how they practice. And it's sad that Javier Becerra, raised as a Catholic, is so strongly pro-abortion. We have a lot to fix in our own church, certainly, and in the medical profession additionally.
Sydney, thank you so much. Dr. Delgado, you said only I don't want to say only, but it's about 14 or 15%, you said, of OBGYNs?
Yeah, that's one study I've seen in the past. 14 to 15% will perform abortions because, you know, it's kind of the dirty underbelly of medicine. It really is.
Yeah.
And so a lot of doctors shy away from it, and I think they have a natural repugnance towards abortion, which is, it's a good thing because it's such an evil thing. And I think that's why more doctors don't perform abortions. And there is certainly an aging of the abortionist population, and the hardcore abortionists have tried to counter that. They've now have created a new subspecialty of OBGYN called advanced, I think it's called complex or advanced family planning, which really is a euphemism for training doctors to do second and third trimester abortions. So this is led by people at UCSF, for example, and they were really leading the charge to try to bring more younger doctors into the abortionist fold, especially to do second and third trimester abortions. And also why they've been pushing the medical abortion mifepristone so much, because it doesn't truly require a hands-on abortionist. Their hope is that it can be given by anybody.
Again, 888-318-7884. I am going to go right back to the callers, but because you mentioned euphemism, I have to ask you if you saw this. There's an infants born alive, or no, it's called Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, and CNN reported on it that it would protect a fetus who was born in the same way that a newborn baby would be predicted. That seems to me the height of euphemism. There's no difference between a fetus who is born and a newborn baby, is there?
No, there. You know, by definition, a neonate, that's the medical term, which is synonymous with newborn, is after, essentially after the baby's head has passed out of the birth canal, then that is no longer called a fetus, it's now called a neonate. So there's really, you're right, no difference. It's just a matter of semantics.
But the semantic has a purpose. In other words, and this is not an opinion piece. This is a news piece from CNN. And the purpose for that is to make us more comfortable with letting that child die.
Exactly. And the thing we have to, of course, keep in mind is that many of these major news outlets don't just report the news. They're mostly opinion pieces.
Well,
propaganda.
I'm sure that that's true. I am sure that that's true. Dr. George Delgado is our guest, giving us some clear, non-euphemistic talk about human life in all of its stages. 888-318-7884 is our number. We'll go all the way down to Columbia, South Carolina now. John, listening on FM 90.9, St. Joseph Catholic Radio in Columbia, South Carolina. Go ahead, John, with your question for our guest, Dr. George Delgado.
Thank you, Dr. Delgado. I appreciate your comments tonight, especially regarding your comment about the evil of abortion. And my comment, question to you is, I've written a letter to the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops saying we have gotten so, we are not doing a very good job at the Catholic Church. We're down to saying, and Lord, we pray for an end to abortion. Lord, hear our prayer. Should we not be asking our parish priest to speak at least once a month on the evils of abortion? How many have we killed? 60 million? I mean, this is a great Holocaust, in my opinion. And I also want to ask you, who would you recommend that we write to get this done? Because I have not heard back from the USCCB.
Okay, John, thank you.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your concern, and you know, I think it's true that the most important thing is prayer and fasting, because this, above all, this is a spiritual battle. It's a battle that only we can only win with God's help. And if we remember the Israelites in their desert wanderings and throughout the history, when their faith was with God and they obeyed God and did as God wanted, they marched around Jericho and blew their trumpets, and the walls collapsed. When they sent the 12 spies into the Promised Land, you know, 40 years earlier, and they came back and they told stories of giants, and they were afraid. They didn't trust God. Well, then they didn't succeed, and they had to spend 40 years in the desert. So same with us. We have to put total trust in God. But at the same time, like you say, we still have to work on the natural level, on the human level. And part of that is exhortation from our priests and our bishops. And I do agree that we do have to support them and encourage them. So what I always recommend is finding those who are sympathetic to you and asking how you can help. On the USCCB level, you know, it's an organization that is largely bureaucratic, unfortunately. And I think it's in some ways it's lost its way because of that. But there are very, very good bishops. And right now we have a great Archbishop John Naumann from Archdiocese of Kansas City, St. Joseph, who is the head of the pro-life committee. And he's been sticking his neck out there. He's the one who's sending out press releases saying that that President Biden needs to repent because he's a Catholic and he's not acting like a Catholic. He's the one who's saying that President Biden should not receive the Holy Eucharist because he's profaning it by supporting abortion and receiving the Eucharist. So these are our champions. We need to rally behind them. People like Archbishop Cordleone, my friend from San Francisco, these are the ones. And we also have a pro-life president of the USCCB, Archbishop.
Nope,
we're sorry. Due to telephone company facility trouble, your call cannot be complete.
We got a little, that's all right. We had a little disconnection there. It actually happened at a fortuitous time. I'm sorry, John, that we didn't get a finish to your question. Maybe Dr. Delgado will want to say more when we come back on the other side of the break. But we have to take this break anyways. It's a hard break and we can't get out of it. So perfect time for us to reestablish that communication with Dr. George Delgado. 888-318-7884 is our number. Well, any pro-life question is welcome. If you want to ask about suicide, if you want to ask about treatment of disease, if you want to ask about vaccinations, if you want to ask about abortion, euthanasia, any others, whether you're Catholic or not, it's all welcome this hour, 888-318-7884.
We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
According to divine command, we should give God worship, but how do we know if we're doing it right? Is worship a form of self-help? To make me feel better? A form of social activism or even a commodity? Or is it something that transcends all of those? In Real Religion, How to Avoid False Faith and Worship God in Spirit and Truth, Father Jeff Kirby cuts through the misguided modern notions about God and religion and takes you back to the foundation for true worship. God's revelation about himself. From his first contact with his chosen people to the culmination of his revelation in Jesus Christ, God shows us what religion is supposed to be like and how to make the practice of it a lifelong virtue in our lives. Order your copy of Real Religion by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Success takes many forms. How would you describe it? Join us tomorrow for a lively discussion about this on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on most of these EWTN stations. Now we return to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Thanks for your patience. We have these little difficulties every now and then. We're delighted to have you here with us. Whether you're Catholic or not, if you're interested in life issues, this hour is for you. You're welcome to call with your question, 888-318-7884. You want to know about the proper and ethical treatment of human life, even sometimes in very morally complex situations. Well, our guest is well-versed in the teaching of the Catholic Church and in the considerations of the Catholic Church for the proper treatment of life. And I have to say, I am of the strong belief that there is no institution on earth that has thought longer or harder about these things or come to a clearer understanding than the Catholic Church. 888-318-7884 is our number. Dr. George Delgado, our guest. And on the line for Dr. Delgado in Oklahoma City is Dee. Dee in Oklahoma City, thanks so much for your call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Hello. If someone may or may not have a terminal disease and they refuse medical treatment, is that a form of suicide?
Well, it depends on the circumstances and the intent. So let's take the extreme example. If someone, let's say, has an infection that is very easily treatable and the burdens would be minimal, and that person refuses the antibiotic with the intention of trying to die, then that could be tantamount to suicide. However, with other forms of treatment that have burdens then the person has the right to weigh the burdens versus the benefits. And especially if a person is terminal, then at that point in a person's life, treatments often start to lose effectiveness, but they still retain all of their side effects. So the that's why we look at the burdens versus the benefits and the intention. So a person, let's say, who has very severe lung disease may decide that going to the hospital and being put on a breathing machine, which carries great risks and great discomfort, is not what he or she wants to do anymore, then refusing that so-called extraordinary care, or it's also called disproportionate care, would be fine, and it's not mandatory to accept that. Even similarly, we've been hearing about the COVID-19 vaccines, and people are not morally obligated to accept these vaccines. It's important for us to know that these really are optional, and a lot of it has to do with prudential judgment. There are some moral implications of it, and I won't get into that now because we have other people on the line asking other questions. But it kind of all boils down to what a person really wants. And so there's a lot of leeway for that, but when it comes down to if a person has an intent of refusing treatment in order to die, and that treatment is not burdensome and is considered part of ordinary care, then that could be morally illicit or what we would say morally not acceptable. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does very much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much. 888-318-7884. As I mentioned, as we were just starting this half hour together, Dr. Delgado, that the Catholic Church has really reflected on these things for a long time. And so in many of these situations, it's like those distinctions that you made are very careful and fine distinctions that keep us from making errors or doing things that are immoral to people who are in the end stages of life. But also they keep us from being overzealous in a way that could be really pointless and harmful to the person.
That's right. The Catholic Church really, in many respects, has the middle position, the very, very prudent middle position.
I feel comforted by that because I do think that many of the people who are advocates for euthanasia and suicide are in fact, just afraid that some kind of overzealous treatment will disregard their suffering, and they want to make sure that they're not put in that situation. But that's not what we're asking to happen to people.
No, it's not. We're just asking that people respect life and respect the author of life.
Let's go now to Peter in New Hampshire, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Peter, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on the air. I greatly appreciate everything you guys do at EWTN. It's really helping me as a Catholic father to raise my family in the faith.
Praise God. Thank you,
Peter. My question is, yeah, you guys are awesome. I'm a veterinarian, and a lot of, you know, what I do is kind of helping people essentially ease the suffering of animals, and, you know, it's appropriate to euthanize animals. We're different from animals. You know, we're placed in this position of responsibility over them. There's no point to their suffering. So, you know, I get that. But a lot of times I'll have people make comments or questions like, oh, why can't it be like this for my mother or my grandmother? So my question, you know, I don't want to really get into theological debates or arguments at that time because it's a very kind of tense moment and there's a lot of emotions. And I'm sure people run into this in other discussions about euthanasia. So I was just wondering if you have any advice for in those sort of situations, what would be a good, prudent, and kind of loving way to handle that? Thank you.
Sure, yeah. And that's a great scenario you bring up. I've never been asked that before. But essentially, when God, back in Genesis and God's creation, he gave us dominion over all animals. So that means that we, as human beings, are masters of all animals. Now, it doesn't mean that we can mistreat animals. So it doesn't mean that you can kill an animal, euthanize an animal, just willy-nilly. It means that you euthanize an animal because that's what's best for the animal, because the animal is suffering. And the animal, since we are the masters of it, we can make the decisions for the animal, and that's perfectly appropriate. However, although we are animals biologically, we are higher animals, of course, because we have eternal souls. It's said that animals have an animal soul. You can think of it, and that's just a term for the animating principle of that creature. But we know that when that creature dies, that animating principle, or you can call it an animal soul, no longer exists. While when we die physically, our immortal soul continues. And so although we were given dominion over the animals, we were made in God's image, and so we are not total masters of ourselves. We are stewards of ourselves. And because of that, we have to have the utmost respect for the human life that God gave us. And that's why we have to never usurp God's authority as the master. And when we euthanize other people, we are taking that that role as master away from God, and we are declaring ourselves the authors of death at that point, and killing innocent human beings. And of course, in the Ten Commandments, the fourth commandment, which in the first three, of course, deal with God. The last seven deal with how we treat human beings. Well, the most important one is, actually the fifth commandment. The fourth is honor your father and mother, is thou shalt not kill. And so it's important that means that we shall not kill innocent human beings. So we're never allowed to kill an innocent human being, and that's what euthanasia is. And so I would draw that distinction that we are stewards of our own lives. We are masters over animals' lives. When animals suffer, we can put that animal to death. When humans are suffering, we cannot kill an innocent human being. We'd be violating the Ten Commandments. But instead, we do whatever we can to provide relief to that suffering. Now, of course, sometimes providing relief for that suffering may shorten the person's life, and we then invoke the principle of double effect. It's not our intention, but there's no better way to bring relief, and we foresee that. But that is not our intention. So I think that's how I would gently discuss with these people why euthanizing animals can be acceptable while euthanizing humans is never acceptable.
And Peter, I'm going to leave it there and say thanks, because we have to take a quick break. Right back with more of our Pro-Life Open Forum with Dr. George Delgado right after this.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org. A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Once you lose faith, if somebody does something to you and hurts you one time, two times, three times, four times, St. Peter thought seven was a good number. How often should I forgive my brother, Lord? Seven times? My Lord said, no. 70 times 7 times a day.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Pro-Life Open Forum this hour. Dr. George Delgado here to take your questions. And we'll go to upstate New York, listening on the Station of the Cross. Brian, listening on the Station of the Cross, you are up. Go ahead with your question for Dr. George Delgado. Brian.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is, why did the Vatican and also the NCB Center and Archbishop Nauman, who you talked about earlier, why did they approve the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines when they were both tested on aborted fetal cell lines?
Okay, that's a great question. And I think what you have to, I think the different people and groups you mentioned all came out with different statements, and some of them are kind of nuanced. So I think it's important just to kind of dissect this a little bit, not taking too much time, of course. But so these two vaccines were in their developmental stages, were tested on cell cultures that were human cultures that were started with from immortal cell lines that were originally started from cells taken from aborted babies. It's important to realize that the researcher who started these cell lines, he went to the abortion and was there waiting for these cells, and he specifically requested this baby, I want to be at a baby who's aborted sort of at this age. So it was very, very much, the research was very much tied to that abortion. That abortion took place probably about 40 years ago. And then those cells were taken, they were grown in a certain way so that they become, quote, immortalized. They may not actually be immortal, but they'll last for many, many years, and they've lasted already 40 years. And then they have the cell lines they sell to researchers. They take some of those cells, they put them in a dish, they grow it, and that's a cell culture. And it, in the development, both the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines were tested on those to make sure they worked. Now in their production, however, they do not utilize cell cultures at all. Okay. That's in contradistinction to the Janssen vaccine made by Johnson & Johnson, which each lot of vaccine is actually grown on those cell cultures that I just described. So that one is more closely connected to abortion than the first one. So I consider all three of them ethically tainted, with the Janssen vaccine more ethically tainted. Right. So the church has, Dignitas Personae was published many years ago, has said that when there is a treatment that has a link to abortion, that if there is a better treatment that is not linked to abortion, that Catholics and all people of goodwill should choose the one that has no connection to abortion. However, if there's no substitute, and especially they're talking about vaccines, no vaccine substitute, then we are free to choose to take that vaccine or that treatment as long as there's a serious health risk that's being avoided by doing that. And so in the case of COVID-19, it's a very serious pandemic. So I think saying that it's acceptable to take that vaccine, I think they were correct from an ethical standpoint, and they're very consistent with Catholic teaching. Now, where I think that some bishops, and Archbishop Naum, but other bishops, and I think even statements by Pope Francis have come out, I think some of those statements, they've been, to use common parlance, a bit swimming out of their lanes. I think they've been making pronouncements outside of their competency when they've been talking about the scientific basis for these vaccines, and also some almost saying statements implying that it's a requirement to get the vaccine, that it's a duty to get the vaccine. I think they've overstepped themselves there. I don't think that there should be, first of all, I don't think people of the church should be really commenting on scientific stuff, because they're just parroting what national scientific bodies and the government are telling them, which may or may not be true, may not be totally based on fact. There's a lot we don't know about these vaccines as far as the safety and so forth, because they haven't been tested as long as other vaccines. So I think in those areas, they've maybe outstepped their competency, so to speak. And I do not believe that it is necessarily a duty to receive this vaccine from a Christian standpoint. I think it's something that the duty is to carefully consider whether you should get the vaccine, and then you make the prudential judgment based on your circumstances and on your conscience. But the other part of it, I think they are on solid footing. I hope that makes sense.
Thank you so much, Brian, for the question. It's a question on lots and lots of people's mind. It's a pro-life open forum this hour. Dr. George Delgado is our guest, and we go now down to Mississippi, listening on the almighty 690 AM is Michael. Michael, thank you so much for your call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Yes, thank you, gentlemen. It's my understanding that Catholic social teaching, or Catholic teaching in general, does not consider inserting a feeding tube into an elderly patient, for instance, as extraordinary or disproportionate care when it comes to end-of-life issues. I'm afraid I made a serious mistake back in 2009 when my mother, who had been suffering from Alzheimer's since around the year 2000, was hospitalized with a urinary tract infection, but it wound up being life-threatening. And near the end, she was in the hospital for about a week. I was taking care of her at home when she was admitted to the hospital. And, of course, I went to the hospital with her and stayed with her, as did with many members of my family. But I was consulted by the members of the palliative care staff, a doctor and a nurse, who, as I understood our conversation, was encouraging me. We didn't specifically talk about a feeding tube, because unfortunately I wasn't aware of whether a feeding tube was considered extra. I wasn't even sure. I didn't even know the definition of extraordinary or disproportionate care at that time, which is my fault. But the palliative care staff did not indicate anything one way or the other about a feeding tube, and I wasn't smart enough to ask them. But I could tell they were encouraging me to put my mother in hospital. The doctors for that week in the hospital had done all they could do for her. She was 94 years old and suffering with Alzheimer's, and it may be her time to die. So I put her in hospice care for a day, and she died after being in hospice care for only a day. But I learned after that something I should have known before. Again, I'm not blaming the doctors, I'm blaming myself. I should have known that myself as a practicing Catholic, that was not extraordinary care. I later heard in a seminar at the Catholic Life Center in Baton Rouge that this was a speaker, not a doctor, but an expert in the area, indicated that, well, yes, that's the teaching of the church, but there might be some circumstances where the feeding tube should not be inserted in certain circumstances.
So is this what we want to get from Dr. Delgado, whether there was an absolute necessity to insert a feeding tube to someone in the condition that your mother described, or whether there might be circumstances where that would be appropriate not to insert the feeding tube? Is that what we're asking, Michael?
Yes.
Okay, Dr. Delgado?
Yeah. Okay, so it's a very common scenario you're describing. Let me talk about the general concepts first, and then I'll talk about your mother's case specifically. So the default position of the church is that it is assumed that providing fluid and nutrition, no matter what the means, is obligatory and is not extraordinary care. So you're right about that. That's the general principle. However, because the church is so prudent and like we said, really the middle ground, the exceptions are when the provision of food and nutrition by whatever means, whether it's by a feeding tube or a vein or something else, would cause more burden than benefit, number one. Number two, where it would not achieve its finality. In other words, giving that would not lead to improved nutrition, or it's not absorbed in some way. So in the case of your mother, the fact that she died the next day tells me that whether or not she would have had the feeding tube would not have made a difference. So in that case, the doctors actually gave good advice that they didn't explain it all to you, but they were reasoning that, you know, whether you give your mother a feeding tube won't make a difference. She's ready to die. And why burden her with a feeding tube, either having a procedure where it's poked through the stomach wall or if it's put down her nose? That would not have been the best thing for your mother. So actually, I think you did the right thing. Now, there are other cases where patients could benefit from a feeding tube, and the doctors sort of have this blanket answer, no feeding tubes, and the people go along with it, and those people actually do die of dehydration and starvation. And that is not morally acceptable. So that's the sort of the opposite end of the spectrum. And then the other thing, you know, with Alzheimer patients, some studies have shown that they actually don't live any longer with feeding tubes, so maybe it's better just to hand feed them. The formula given by feeding tubes sometimes can cause diarrhea and skin breakdown, a lot of problems. So it's not as clear-cut as you might think, but it's good to know the ethical principle, which is you should assume that it's obligatory unless it's going to cause more harm than good, and then you have to look at the particular circumstances to see if it'll cause more harm than good.
Michael,
I hope that makes sense.
Does that ease your mind a bit, Michael?
Cy and Dr. Delgado, thank you very much. That was totally helpful. Thank you very much.
Oh, praise God. God bless you, Michael. Thank you so much for the call. Dr. George Delgado, our guest. I'm going to go quick here now because I want to get as many on as I can. It's Pro-Life Open Forum. Chris in Florida, you are next. Go ahead, Chris, with your question for Dr. Delgado.
Hi, Dr. Delgado, and God bless both of you for the work that you do. I'll try to make it concise. I'm actually a nurse practitioner, and, you know, I work in a critical care environment. And, you know, I've kind of experienced this from time to time where patients will have, like, certain heart diseases or aortic diseases where really pregnancy would, you know, kind of cause so much stress on them that they would most likely immediately pass away if they were to continue with the pregnancy. So, you know, at times it just pops into my head. I know that it's never licit to, you know, commit an abortion to do something good. It's never good to commit evil to, even if it's for a good purpose. But are there ever circumstances in which we as Catholics would be able to tolerate or even recommend an abortion to save the mother's life if it's immediately threatened by the pregnancy?
Yeah, so the short answer is no. There's never a circumstance. But when I say no, I'm referring to direct abortion. That's no the action of directly killing the baby. However, the church says it's fine if the baby is viable to induce labor early in order to decrease the physiologic burden on the mother. That's something that's acceptable. Or you can aggressively, if the baby's not viable and you can't deliver, you can aggressively treat the mother's disease. And even if you foresee that that aggressive treatment could harm the preborn baby or even kill the preborn baby, because then you'd be invoking the principle of double effect. So that is acceptable. And I would also caution you and ask you to research what the real numbers are, because it's often that when mothers with, you know, pulmonary hypertension and other bad heart and lung conditions, they exaggerate the risks to the mother of pregnancy. And I don't want to minimize the risks in those critical situations, but I think it's important to know the real numbers, and it's important for people like you who are men of God to be able to, and when you have the discussions in ICU, to say, well, actually, I looked up the literature, and, you know, the mortality rate is only 15%. It's not all the time, you know, because they really do exaggerate, and you'll see it time and time again, and it's good just to bring good sound numbers back into the discussion, because that's important too.
Does that make good sense to you, Chris? Hang on. Chris, I think I might have messed you up.
These are very rare situations, but, you know, it's kind of those rare ones that sometimes bother you at night. But I thank you. I thank you for your clear answer.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Chris. Dr. George Delgado, our guest, Dr. Delgado, trained both as an ethicist and a physician. Are we making any progress, or is this just we live in a time where we're just going to have to go one soul by the next and try to convince them of the pro-life position?
Well, I think it's both, and I think we have to, on a one-on-one basis, charitably present the truth, and then we also have to, on a broader basis, things like radio shows and conferences and others, really kind of take the pulpit and preach the truth that way. And both are going to be successful in the end, because we know that if God is for us, who can be against us?
Amen. If God is for us, who can be against us? Dr. George Delgado, our guest. We're glad that you come on this radio program. We really do appreciate it. We'll see you again next time for our next Pro-Life Open Forum.
Thanks for having me. God bless you.
And then tomorrow we got Open Forum, right? We got 2 hours of Open Forum, and I'm going to guess we've got, nope, I can't guess. Who's on? Jimmy Akin, Jim Blackburn. I already knew that. Come on. It was right there on the tip of my brain. But, brain doesn't always work that well. We'll see you then tomorrow for Open Forum, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.